The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to another weekend bonus episode of the Tech Meme Ride Home. I'm Brian McCullough. So for the final weekend bonus episode of 2019, I wanted to check in with crypto. What a year for the crypto space. Seemingly dead at the beginning of the year, but then the crypto spring happened, and then Libra happened, and so where are we now? No one better than CoinDesk's Brady Dale to catch us up. So I know this is the most annoying question to get asked as a reporter on your beat, but let's start off with Bitcoin and the price of Bitcoin. And because I think the last time I spoke to you was right when the so-called crypto spring was happening and Bitcoin was back above 10,000. So in the intervening months, what has happened? I see we're back under 10,000 and have been for a while.
Yeah, I'm kind of falling right around 7,000. You know, I mean, no one ever really knows like why the price is what the price is, but like, I can tell you that like as spring was coming, you know, I had people telling me to who argued that like every time Bitcoin starts to like really do a rally, it like does an enormous rally and look for a giant number by the end of the year, and that really doesn't seem like it's going to happen. I think, you know, this is just my explanation just based on some stuff people have said to me around the space, but I think folks continue to be disappointed by the fact that big players still aren't moving into the space. And so, you know, that's what I'm going to go to for my explanation, but you know, a million things are happening. Another useful thing though, we don't really know why exactly, but one of our reporters did a story recently, that was about how the correlation between the stock market and Bitcoin is really starting to break down. So it used to be that as stocks would fall, people would retreat to Bitcoin in a much more decisive way. And that's happening so much less now that it's almost like the correlation isn't even really there anymore. And there's people who've always questioned that correlation, but that's another part of the story, that some folks are seeing. It's not a place to retreat to as much as it once was.
Well, let me come back to what you said about, you know, the big institutional players or the big money not really showing up, because I feel like that's a lot of what I was, when I did report on this stuff, was talking about earlier in the year, that it was, you know, Goldman or whoever was opening a crypto desk, and there were futures contracts being traded and things like that. So I felt like the first half of the year, it was all about getting that institutional infrastructure in place. Did it not follow through? Did it not actually happen?
I think the big scale stuff hasn't happened. You know, I mean, there are futures contracts out there that you can get, and you know, I think some of the bigger players are messing around with this stuff a little. But I think one thing that we don't know the extent of that's happening because these entities tend to be so private about it is, I bet there are in fact more like, I had a story about a year and a half ago, I had a couple of retirement funds taking a very small position in a few cryptocurrencies through another fund. And I bet there's more of that than we actually know about, but there just hasn't been like, much marquee moves, you know, with like of giant banks themselves taking positions in Bitcoin that I think people were hoping for. So,
yeah. You know, I'm sure that smarter people than me have thought this, but I was thinking the other day, like, you know, maybe that original first rally was just, you're talking about like big money, like hedging and like nibbling around the edges. Like, what if that big rally was just everyone that had a lot of money, just, you know, if I was a billionaire, I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'll throw $1 million into Bitcoin just to be as a hedge. You know, you never know. Maybe like all that money that's already happened and no one's ever had the conviction to follow through and jump in with both feet or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. You know, there's a guy, Travis Kling at, I'm going to say the name of his company wrong. It's like Haggai Asset Management. You know, he made a pretty strong argument recently that the crypto spring Bitcoin rally was all just a hustle of a few whales in Bitcoin that they did for reasons of their own. Like they wanted it for a minute. And so they did it. So it's just, it's always hard to know. I think, you know, one of the, if, the thing that crypto keeps wanting to see and that the SEC keeps refusing to give them is a Bitcoin ETF. And a part of the reason why the SEC refuses to do a Bitcoin ETF, they keep saying, is because they still feel like the market is manipulatable. And if Kling's analysis is right, you know, it still is. And so, you know, and so that's a part of it. And then, which would also explain why bigger institutions are still somewhat nervous about it.
What about all the other coins, which I have not been following up on at all? You know, everybody from Ethereum to you know, you name it. Has it been, was there sort of a similar spring for them that's sort of ebbed away as well?
Yeah, I mean, it all tends to go pretty together. You know, if you just scan over the charts, you know, they all tell a pretty similar story. The world has not, the broader correlation between these assets has not changed dramatically.
So the other thing, the last time we talked, and it's almost, we've gone through a whole cycle with this subsequently, but a lot of people were saying that it was because Facebook was getting into crypto, and so there was a rally because everyone thought that that was going to mainstream it. And, you know, we're going to get into this in a second, but is the fact that seemingly maybe Libra is not going to be as big a thing as people thought sort of dampening people's excitement?
Yeah, probably. You know, I think if there were folks who were pricing in Libra happening soon, they were crazy. That was always going to take a while. You know, I think maybe also there's a chance that I think maybe some people are getting afraid that Libra is kind of educating legislators on cryptocurrency, and they might take a broader look too. Maybe that is making folks nervous. I don't know. But it's certainly, yeah, the Libra story certainly hasn't helped. It's been a lot of negative attention to crypto.
Well, so what's your take on, you know, Libra's health at the moment, seeing as how it's not actually alive yet? But I mean, you know, are all of the payment companies basically out of the association at this point?
I believe PayU is still in, right? They're a pretty small one out of Latin America, so I'm pretty sure they still are in. But yeah, like all the other ones that everyone has heard of left, and yeah, PayU is still in. And they left, that was a wild day. They left like all on the same day. So it was really wild when it happened. But yeah, you know, Visa, MasterCard, Stripe, Mercado Pago, they all backed out kind of at roughly the same time. And, it looked like a really bad moment for Facebook, and people were like, Libra is dead. I definitely don't think that's true. I think this is way more than a side project for Facebook. I think they're gonna see it through and make it happen. But the companies that stood to gain the least, you know, got cold feet first.
Well, right. I mean, on the one hand, it would seem like if Libra were successful, it would sort of cut into the businesses of, if you're a payments company. But then, was it also just as simple as, you know, why, if you're Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, why do you want any sort of regulatory scrutiny? You're doing fine as it is. Like, is basically that's the bottom line. They're just like, why do we need this hassle?
I think so. Yeah, I think they viewed it at first as a hedge. You know, they're like, well, if this is really going to, you know, eat our lunch eventually, let's like kind of be a part of it. But then they were, and then I think they thought it was just completely not worth it. You know, like you said, it's just too much regulatory scrutiny. They don't want anyone to have any sign of them doing anything wrong or enabling doing anything wrong. So, yeah, I think they disappeared. You know, the thing that I think is, not that I'm like, I want to like carry Zuck's water here or anything, but you know, a part of the story which I feel like has been missed about Libra is if we take Facebook at its word, and I think this is at least somewhat true, that the point of Libra is to bring functional financial systems to parts of the world that don't really have it at a price that they can afford, you know, quickly and easily, allow them to kind of like leapfrog in the same way a lot of developing worlds leapfrog to cellular before ever building landline systems. If we take it, them at face value, and I don't completely disbelieve that. I mean, I think they have some other reasons too, but I do think they want to do that. It is kind of crazy that we're just completely stifling this company's ability to reach the developing world for 1,000,000% first world concerns. You know, I mean, this is all Europe and America pushing back, and for reasons that are, you know, layers and layers and layers up the financial stack from the population that this whole project was aimed at.
But everything you guys, the tea leaves that you guys are reading, Facebook is still going ahead with this, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Do you think we'll see, what are the odds that we would actually see a product launch in 2020?
I'm going to put that at 15%.
Hmm. Why? Because it's gonna take them years and years to, now that they're in the regulatory quagmire, it's gonna take a while to iron that all out.
Yeah, and I think there is a chance that they will eventually move fast and break things. Like, I think there's a chance that they'll eventually just do it somewhere and deploy a million team of lawyers to say, like, well, we're just doing it in Indonesia or whatever, so it's not relevant to, U.S. law. I think there's a chance that eventually they'll do some gigantic backflip to do that. And I would not be surprised if they weren't preparing a plan to do that now. But they're a giant company that's making lots of money. They have plenty of runway. They're not going to do it next week. They're going to, they're going to wait a while and see if they can, get some approval. One of the things I wonder about is if we do actually see the launch of any sovereign cryptocurrency. So, for example, China has this one it's sort of talking about. I'm a little bit more interested in the one that Marshall Islands is talking about. But if there were a sovereign cryptocurrency that it were to appear, it would effectively do a lot of the things, if it's really a cryptocurrency, that regulators are so nervous about Libra being able to do. And so it feels like that's a world in which it would become easier for Facebook to roll something out if there was some kind of sovereign coin out there that people took seriously. I think if something like that happened, it could move things along. I think Facebook will make an argument for that. So I have a feeling they're watching for things like that too. But I do sort of believe that Libra is existential to Facebook, and so I don't think that they're going to rush it. But I also think they're not going to give up on it.
When you go through airport security, there's one line where the TSA agent checks your ID, and another line where a machine scans your bag. The same thing happens in enterprise security, but instead of passengers and luggage, it's end users and their devices. These days, most companies are pretty good at the first part of the equation, where they check user identity. But user devices can roll right through authentication without getting inspected at all. In fact, 47% of companies allow unmanaged, untrusted devices to access their data. That means an employee can log in from a laptop that has its firewall turned off and hasn't been updated in 6 months, or worse, that laptop might belong to a bad actor using employee credentials. Collide finally solves the device trust problem. Collide ensures that no device can log into your Okta-protected apps unless it passes your security checks. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux fleet, contractor devices, and every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. Visit collide.com/ride to watch a demo and see how it all works. That's KOLIDE.com/ride, collide.com/ride. Let's be real for a minute. Most guys would wear a t-shirt every day of their lives if they could. The problem is that most t-shirts are not acceptable to wear at work or out on a hot date night. But today's sponsor, Cuts, has finally changed that. Cuts t-shirts are such high quality, wrinkle-free, and so buttery soft that you can look like you're dressing up even when you're dressing down. Yeah, you heard that. Wrinkle-free. You never have to substitute comfort for fashion ever again. If you see me in a t-shirt, it's likely one from Cuts. I'm also a huge fan of their AO 5-pocket pants. The right sort of step up from jeans without going all the way into dress pants. Like literally my ideal Venn diagram of professional looking but comfortable feeling. When you touch something from Cuts, you can immediately feel the quality. Their proprietary fabric blends are ridiculously soft and breathable. They don't wrinkle, and they look way more expensive than they actually are. For a limited time, our listeners get 20% off your entire order when you use code RIDE at checkout. That's 20% off your order at cutsclothing.com with promo code RIDE. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience the perfect blend of style and comfort with Cuts Clothing. cutsclothing.com, promo code RIDE for 20% off.
I did not cover this story, so I'm going to have to lean on you a little bit to actually explain the story before we talk about it. But this Ethereum guy that just got arrested, Virgil Griffith,
right,
is his name.
First
of all, tell us what happened, and then was he a big deal in Ethereum?
Yeah, so Virgil, he wasn't like a famous guy, but people really like him in the Ethereum world, and he had like hacker cred well before Ethereum too. He was well known in, like, for example, the Tor community, like well ahead of ever being involved in Ethereum. But he was a good friend of Vitalik's. He did like special projects for the Ethereum Foundation, so which meant that like he was largely just going around the world trying to like find new ways to move Ethereum forward. So, for example, we did a story not too long ago about how he was trying to get Ethereum approved as compliant under Sharia law, the Muslim law. There's been some cryptocurrencies that have succeeded in doing that so far. He was trying to get that for Ethereum. So he did things like that. People liked him. You know, he was viewed as something as like a mentor figure. But he also, I don't know Griffith. I know a lot of people who do know him, but I don't know him personally. But he's kind of one of those dreamery, hackery types. He's, you know, sort of ideological. And so the story of what happened is in April this year, he took a trip to North Korea with a few other, you know, non-North Koreans, not a large number, we're told. And it was sort of one of their typical tourist trips that they do. You know, everyone's approved to go. It's all scheduled. You're constantly with a minder the whole time, where you got to see some different parts of Korea. But it ended with this Pyongyang blockchain conference. And Virgil gave a presentation there, you know, allegedly on blockchain and peace. And then subsequent to that, he volunteered to do an interview with the FBI about it. In which he told the FBI what he did. He like let them look at his phone. He showed them photos, and the FBI arrested him on Thanksgiving Day for going to North Korea, teaching them about blockchain technology, and allegedly discussing with people how blockchain technology could be used for evading sanctions. But I will say one of the things in the complaint, you sort of wonder how much of this stuff the FBI understands. One of the things they sort of emphasize in the complaint is some discussion of mining, and which is like, you know, cryptocurrency mining. So for folks who are listening don't know, you know, people basically like deploy these computers in the network that crunch a bunch of numbers that allow them to earn cryptocurrency. And so, you know, you could argue, I guess, a way that North Korea could, you know, evade sanctions is by taking some money they have, buying some, you know, mining computers, some like in China, for example, and then running them in North Korea and generating ETH that way. I guess you'd call that evading sanctions. It's a different thing, but it would be a way in which they were generating, you know, what is money, and the US doesn't like that. So he admitted to all these different activities. I think the most damning thing from most people's perspective is the FBI says in their complaint that Griffith sought permission from the U.S. State Department to go to North Korea and do this. They denied it, and he went anyway. I saw one attorney pointed out that the FBI complaint doesn't give any details of the denial. Like, it doesn't say when the denial actually happened. So I guess theoretically, maybe Griffith was still waiting on the denial, you know, when he went. It doesn't actually address that. But anyway, they say that it was denied, and he still did it anyway, and then later admitted to having done it. And so he's been arrested for violating U.S. law in that way.
This is a story that actually I'm seeing a bit of chatter about just today. We might get our first crypto native senator, at least temporarily, it looks like.
Yeah, well, and you know, we can debate whether she's crypto native or not, but that was a story that she is the CEO of a division of the company that runs New York Stock Exchange, ICE, that is sort of managing crypto holdings and exchange, and well, specifically Bitcoin, holding Bitcoin in exchanges for folks backed. I mean, you know, how hardcore Ms. Loeffler really is, the future senator, Senator Loeffler is, really is about Bitcoin, sort of unclear. She had worked in public relations for ICE for the last 18 years and then was appointed to this CEO job. You know, she did that for, I don't know, 18 months, and now she's moving on to the Senate. So I'm sort of curious to see how much crypto claims her as one of their own, you know, and we'll see. But yeah, so it looks like she's moving to the Senate at least for a little while. And then if she wins the election that comes up at the end of the actual term, you know, she'll stick around longer.
Right. This is, she would be appointed by the governor of Georgia for the interim position. And, so if
she has been, so as of, as of today, officially, like, she has been. Gotcha. Yeah, it was rumored. It's been rumored for a little bit. But as of today, we now know that he is saying, yes, she's the pick.
Something else that, came across my transom recently was something about the Lightning Network. And again, that was something that I feel like I was hearing a lot about towards the end of last year, beginning of this year. Where are we on the Lightning Network?
Lightning Network's going fine. It's, you know, still a beta network. What is the latest news on Lightning? I'm not really sure. They just did a big, conference that a lot of people went to in Germany. You know, people are feeling pretty good about it. So I guess what might be helpful for your listeners to know is sort of what the Lightning Network is Bitcoin, is a seamless and fast way to move value around the world. But it is kind of expensive to do. You know, you have to pay a transaction fee every time you send a Bitcoin, and that can be anywhere from a few cents to a few dollars, depending on how much traffic there is in the network and how much demand there is for Bitcoin at the time. And obviously that's too much. Any sort of really any cost at all is too much for making very small payments. So what the Lightning Network basically does is, to make it insanely simple, is you put your Bitcoin into this other wallet that knows it's there. And then on this second layer network, you can move Bitcoin around really quickly and really trustlessly, and it doesn't cost as much because the Bitcoin isn't actually moving on the Bitcoin network. It's moving on Lightning. It's just all the Bitcoin that's on Lightning is being held in these sort of central wallets. And then whenever you're done doing ever however much you want to do, you can leave it there for days or weeks or years. It doesn't really matter. Whatever amount you have left in your Lightning wallet, you can then take that much out, and it leaves the Lightning Network and goes back to the Bitcoin network, and then that resolves to your Bitcoin wallet. So it's a way to make very small payments using Bitcoin. So yeah, it's proceeding along well, and the community's getting bigger all the time. But I don't think there's been any any breakout success stories yet on Lightning, but it is still beta technology.
If you're like most millennials, you know you should be investing, but you're probably not sure where to start. Getting your money right doesn't have to be hard, though. With SoFi, SoFi Invest makes it easy. It's the first platform to offer stocks, crypto, and automated investing all in one. You'll even get access to SoFi's financial advisors who can answer any questions you have at no cost. Because taking control of your investments shouldn't be intimidating. I've been investing online for myself for 20 years now, and SoFi is the most intuitive and easy-to-use platform that I've tried, and I've tried them all, believe me. SoFi Invest makes investing simple to get started. Here's how it works. First, go to SoFi.com/ride and create your account. Choose to either do it yourself, like me, or let SoFi's automated investing build your portfolio. Use StockBits to buy fractional shares of your favorite stocks. Start with as little as $1.
See for yourself how easy it is to start investing with SoFi at SoFi.com/ride. Fund your SoFi Invest account and receive $25 in mystery stock. That's right, free stock just for signing up. So go to SoFi.com/ride to claim your free stock today. That's SoFi.com/ride. SoFi Lending Corp, CFL number 6054612.
Are there any big stories that I should be watching out for in 2020 in the crypto space that we're anticipating?
Big stories in 2020 in the crypto space. I mean, I think, well, you know, I think we're going to continue to see more resolutions from the SEC's pursuit of various crypto projects. So, you know, we still don't know what's happening with the SEC's case against Kik cryptocurrency. Kin, you know, actually Kik no longer owns Kik the app. They're basically just a cryptocurrency project now. There's only like 18 people on their team. We don't know what's happening with the SEC's pursuit of the Telegram token sale. So I think that's going to be another, you know, big story. So I think continuing to see sort of regulatory clarity, you know, with Loeffler in the Senate and some ties to this community, I think that next year could also be the year in which we see the crypto community actually get serious about pushing for new laws for itself. So I think that's going to be a big thing, which I guess also relates to whatever happens with Yang's campaign. Those are a few things. I think we'll also, look for some more resolution in the world of stablecoins. Stablecoins are cryptocurrencies that don't tend to fluctuate a lot in value. You know, one of the OG stablecoins is this stablecoin called DAI, and it has made some real advances in sort of how it maintains its stability by incorporating more kinds of assets. And look for more of that to happen next year, and for potentially DAI, that you're kind of really the only trustless stablecoin out there, to potentially have a surge. Maybe not, but it's definitely one of the more interesting projects on the Ethereum blockchain, and one of the things is sort of a sign of more of its progress. And it did hit this major milestone this year by incorporating another asset into its set of collateral, and intends to incorporate lots more going into next year.
Finally, real quick, you and I were talking about this offline, but you know, I'm using that Brave browser now, so I'm sitting here looking at 1.8 BAT. So the idea is I should be able to redistribute that to sites now that I'm blocking their ads from, so that, you know, hey, and I didn't watch all your dumb ads, but here, I'll tip you some BAT, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, BAT, I think. You know, Brave, I like the Brave browser. I don't know if you should say that as a journalist, but I like the Brave browser. I've been using it for a long time. And I've been covering BAT for a long time. And you know, I think Brave and BAT deserve some kudos for, they were one of the first big ICOs to actually start doing some of the stuff they promised. You know, there's a lot of ICOs that have raised a lot of money and have, you know, done test nets and some experiments and some, you know, some prototypes and stuff like that. But generally speaking, we haven't seen a lot of those ICOs put out products that real people are using that have had an impact in the real world. And BAT is one of the first ones to do it. So now the Brave browser is serving you ads itself if you get permission to that. And then you earn some BAT for that. These aren't ads on the website. They're like pop-up ads. You earn some BAT for that. And then, yeah, you can donate that, or you might be able to use it to pay for services on sites like subscriptions, but mostly now I think, yeah, people are just redistributing it back to different content creators, largely YouTube creators. YouTube creators are really into that. So that's an ICO that's kind of coming to something. So I think that's pretty interesting. And they were one of the first to do it.
Can I trade BAT on Coinbase?
Or you can definitely trade. I'm pretty sure BAT's on Coinbase, okay. But I don't think you can take it out of the Brave browser quite yet. I can't remember what the latest is on that. You might be able to. When it first came along, you couldn't, but when I first did a story about sort of, you know, earning Brave on BAT, you couldn't take it out of the Brave. You couldn't personally take it out of the Brave browser yet. That might have changed. I haven't double checked on that yet.
I'm looking at the price chart on Coinbase right now. It doesn't look like this is one of those that's going to the moon anytime soon. So, but you know, maybe I'll just hold on to it. It got a $250 million market cap right now. The all-time high was 98 cents, and it's currently 18 cents.
It checks out.
Well, whatever. Listen, like I said, if I can find a way to pass it along to sites that I like, then I'll probably do that.